This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It is Wednesday, the 2nd of March. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Philip C. and Kusu Chuang. Now, though, we are turning our attention to the repercussions of the conflict in Ukraine. So Russia is trying to prevent an economic meltdown as it's slammed with a series of sanctions in response to its assault on Ukraine. The sanctions come in addition to a growing effort to bar Russian banks from the SWIFT global payment system, which is the financial messaging platform that links the globe's biggest banks.
Preventing Russian banks from using this system quashes cross-border financing critical to a modern economy, including trade and foreign investments. Now, before the invasion, the Russian central bank had more than $600 billion in foreign reserves, which ordinarily could be used to prop up its own currency. But the US and its allies now have frozen about $400 billion of that. As a result, the Russian ruble has lost about 40% of its value against the US dollar, causing the Russian central bank to double its interest rate to 20% to shore up the currency.
So what is the impact of the war and the sanctions that followed on the Russian economy, and what kind of reverberations will this have on the European and global economy? So for some perspectives on this, we have Anders Uslund, a senior fellow at the Stockholm World Forum and an adjunct professor at Georgetown University. He has also advised the Russian and Ukrainian governments before. Anders, thanks very much for joining us today. Good morning. Can we start with maybe getting some context on the Russian economy and how it's coped so far? I mean, it has had sanctions imposed on it since 2014. How have these new sanctions impacted the Russian economy?
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here. First, the Russian economy has managed the sanctions, but not very well. Russia's economy has been completely stagnant for the 7 years, 2014 to 2020, and real disposable income has fallen by 11%. I mean, you cannot do much worse without being in a serious financial crisis. And previously, President Putin has very strongly wanted to avoid a serious financial crisis, because that's how he came to power in after the financial crisis in 98. So his big lecture is, if you get a big financial crisis, you lose power in Russia. So therefore, he didn't want to have that. And his recipe for that was extremely conservative fiscal and monetary policy. So he collected $640 billion in international currency reserves, almost half of GDP, which makes no sense. It should have been $150 billion or $200 billion at most. And this means large amounts of money that was not used for the economy. He kept the budget in balance, and Russia has now less than 20% of GDP in public debt. But today, nobody wants to give Russia any money. Russia cannot get money to develop, and suddenly, which Putin apparently didn't realize, the Western countries could just freeze his international reserves because they're held abroad, because you don't keep any money in Russia, because Russia does not have a good judicial system, so property rights are not fair. And the money is then kept abroad, and then it got frozen. So he's sort of completely misjudged.
Yes, Anders, you've worked in the Ukraine. You've been in that part of the world. You've also written in December in Project Syndicate your column where you describe Putin as a desirous of creating a modern-day Sparta, a state focused solely on military prowess. What did you mean by that?
Thank you. I'm very happy you bring it up. Putin does not believe in a modern society. He does not believe in freedom. He does not believe in democracy. He wants to have all power, and he wants to give the rest to his friends and their sons. And you can't run a modern society like that. So Sparta, what is that? You try to capture your neighboring countries to try to capture Athens. And that's what Putin is trying to do now. He knows that his economy will not go upwards. It will only go downwards. And if he doesn't try to attack now, he will not be able to attack later. So he's, so to say, a dead-ender.
So dead-end, is that also what you project in terms of its economy? Is there any way to revive it later then?
I don't see that. So Putin is just closing off the Russian economy, closing off the Russian society. And that's what it's all about. So 1.5 years ago, he published a plan for the next 10 years, predicting no increase in the standard of living of the population, no increase in GDP. No, nobody but Putin would do such a thing.
Anders, can I take a look at how Russia may try to mitigate this situation using its economic linkages with countries like China or other countries that remain friendly to it? How much of this will help buffer Russia's economy in the short to medium term?
I don't think it can at all. The big example is in 2014. Putin and Xi Jinping agreed on the 31st of May 2014 that the Russian state bank, the Chinese state banks should lend Russia $25 billion for the building of a pipeline to China, a gas pipeline to China. But then in mid-July 2014, the US imposed serious sanctions, financial sanctions on Russia because of Russia's aggression in eastern Ukraine. And then the Ukrainian state bank said, sorry, we can't do it. We don't want to be sanctioned in the US. We all have a business there. And this is what is happening time and time again. So here there is a serious misunderstanding here in Washington that people think, some people in Washington think that we should be nice to Russia so that we don't force Russia into being embraced by China. But it doesn't work like that. China is, of course, completely dominant and fully understanding. So the Chinese say, okay, if you're so toxic, then we don't want to deal with us. The Chinese GDP today is 10 times larger than the Russian GDP in US dollars. People don't know that. And after current collapse of a ruble, it might be 20 times larger.
Yeah, and of course that's the sense that people are getting, because there's a sense that China does not step in to mitigate the fallout from Russia's sanctions because China has got so much money invested in Europe. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, exactly. So both Europe and the US are much more important as trading partners and investment partners for China than Russia, because Russia has actually been highly reluctant to accept any Chinese investments, and you can understand why. There are a lot of Russian suspicions that the Chinese want to take over East Siberia, which is actually an official claim of the Chinese state. So the Russian and Chinese relations are like this. I hear from my Russian friends, it's very good between Putin and Xi Jinping, quite reasonable between the ministers, and the heads of the state companies can't get along at all.
I see.
So therefore, they don't get any deals.
And can we just get your perspective on Europe? Because, you know, Europe was hesitant to impose these sanctions because of worries about the economic impact on them. In your assessment, do you think these sanctions could have a negative repercussion on Europe's economy as well? Impact even worse than on Russia?
No, really. I mean, Russia is very insignificant to the European economy, apart from as oil and gas supplier and supplier of certain metals. But in terms of GDP, insignificant. So if we take the most obvious example, Germany, 2% of Germany's exports go to Russia. Germany is the 14th biggest export market of Germany. So there was a study by the Center for European Policy Studies in Brussels a couple of years ago, and they pointed out that European countries did not suffer in the least from Russia's so-called counter-sanctions, prohibiting imports of a number of foodstuffs from Europe, because they could easily sell it elsewhere. So Europe is not dependent on Russia, apart from a few raw materials, which are important.
And Anders, can I just jump in there to ask? We have about a minute left, but as you mentioned, one of the important things is oil and gas. That's what Russia supplies to Europe. Do you think that Russia could turn off the gas pipes then? And what can Europe do if that happens?
Russia could turn off the gas, not the oil. Oil is a very free market globally, but it could turn off the gas, but it's the wrong time to do it. If you do it, you should do it in the middle of the winter, and the middle of the winter has passed. So they have blown the opportunity.
All right, Anders. Thanks very much for your comments and insight this morning. That was Anders Östlund, a senior fellow at the Stockholm World Forum and an adjunct professor at Georgetown University, giving us his take on how these sanctions will impact Russia's economy and the kind of blowback that it might have on European economies.
Well, that's the answer to China's circumspectness where its support or not support of Russia is concerned, because its GDP is 10 times the size of Russia.
Yeah, look at, or 20 times if the ruble continues to depreciate.
Exactly. Right. Look at the fallout on Russia from what Russia has done in the Ukraine. If China does the same thing or even says it supports Russia, I mean, what's going to happen to the Chinese economic engine?
Yeah. Well, it's a very interesting point because we talked earlier on the jacuzzi about how everything is interconnected. So it does make Russia very vulnerable, isn't it?
And I think we do see that even Belarus now is coming under target of sanctions because of its association with Russia. So I think something to watch. Certainly, this is an unfolding story. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.